Hi, this is Christina Merkley, and this is the second call that I'm doing, all around graphic recording and graphic facilitation. And most likely you found me through one or other of my sites. They're www.makemark.com, which is a site all based around group applications where the graphics work. And the other site, www.shift-it-coach.com, is all focused around graphic applications for coaching work, so working with individuals. This is the second in a series of calls. And the first call, which you may or may not have already heard, was all about the basic definitions for this work, four different main areas of the work, and then also kind of a very high-level history of the field of graphic facilitation and graphic recording. And I had mentioned in that call that I often get asked a lot about, you know, Christina, how did you get into this and what was your particular path? Because it's very, you know, it's very helpful to hear other people's stories, particularly if you're wanting to enter this field yourself. So in this call, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to share with you my own individual journey, where it is up to this point in time. And then I'll conclude the second half of the call really focusing on frequently asked questions that I get asked, particularly around, okay, I'd like to enter into this field. How do you suggest I go about doing it? What do you think my next steps should be? So I'll go ahead and do that, like I said, in the second part of this call. There's two resources that I'm using to kind of work my way visually through this call. And both of them are on the makemark.com site. One, for this first part, while I'm talking about my particular personal history and journey, on the About Christina page, there's a visual bio. There's a chart in there that that shows visually my journey. So that might be something you want to open up and take a look at while I go through this story, because that's what I've got in front of me that I'm going to be using to tell the story. And then secondly, when we get into the second part of the call, and I'm going to hopefully be asking or answering some of your questions about how to get into this field if you're a new person to the field who's curious, go to the same site, makemark.com, on the articles page, and you'll see an article entitled, "So You Want to Be a Graphic Recorder or Graphic Facilitator." I'm going to use this article. I'm going to skim it and refer to certain parts of it. So, again, it might be helpful to have that open and in front of you if you care to follow along. Or not. Whatever works for you. So what's my story? Well, okay, I'll give you the high-level view. I'll give you the public view about what my story is. And if you meet me in person, you can buy me a beer and I'll share the some of the deeper detail. Let's see, in a nutshell, what's my story? So I guess probably the place to start would be I'm from Victoria, British Columbia, more or less grew up here, and I have my undergraduate work is English and sociology. So I have a BA in English, and my minor is in sociology. I've always been a word kind of person, love words, love writing. I didn't know at the time how much that was going to play out in my life, but it was certainly there early on. I would also say that I always had an artistic knack. I'm not formally art trained, and I certainly don't identify myself as an artist. I know that's kind of funny because some people think with this visual way of working, that's the first thing that impacts them. But I really come at this from a wordsmith point of view, from academics, and from kind of a change management, organizational development background. And then I entered into the kind of the visual applications of those fields. So I'm doing a series of telephone calls. I'm obviously the first one up, but I'm hoping to interview many different people in the field so you can hear their different paths, because different people enter this field, and it's a very broad field, in many different ways. Some of us come through academics, we've got degrees, others don't. Some, you know, the ones who do have degrees, it might be English, it might be science, it might be business, it might be social work. Some folks are fine art trained. A lot aren't. So just know it's the whole gamut of work. I'm not fine art trained. I am a doodler. If you look back on my math books in grade, 10, 11, 12, they would be filled with doodles. And now I can go back and tell Mr. Leung, my math teacher, that it all worked out okay. He was worrying about me, I think, at that time. Anyway, so BA in English, and I graduated quite young. I went right from high school right into my academics. And from there, I was Victoria, British Columbia, is the capital of the province, and it's a government town. And through a series of quite amazing coincidences, I ended up out of university getting my first office job, and it was at the office of the premier, which is pretty good. It was the premier is like a governor, like an American state. So you have your governors. So I ended up working for a politician, and started out as a receptionist, and worked into being his admin assistant, and was at a very young age. I kind of had my eyes open to the political world, and having to do a lot of handling and talking with the public, and also handling a lot of correspondence. And what happened was I dealt with what's called a signing book. So the premier, each day he was in the office, there were some letters that he had to sign by hand. So part of my responsibility was to put these letters into a big signing book and give them to him when he had a free moment to sign them. And I'd review them, and I'd see that depending on who had written the letter on which topic, sometimes the message wouldn't be in sync depending on who had written it. So it really showed us that as an organization, as an office, we had some internal coordination issues that we needed to get our message straight inside before we kind of communicated with the public. So my boss was the chief of staff, and so I went to the chief of staff and was talking with him and was telling him some different ideas, and basically talked my way into doing a project. And I was transferred over to doing a communications coordination project. And through having to do that job, I stumbled upon the world of organizational development. Being fresh out of school and with an English degree, I was just basically going by instinct. And then I, started to educate myself at the library because I needed to for this project I was doing, and I found that, wow, I was kind of doing a socio-tech review. I didn't have the terminology for it at the time, but stumbled through that to finding that there was a whole field of work called organizational development, which is kind of what I was doing naturally in this office. So I really wanted to go on for more education, and I really became fascinated with organizational development work. And it so happened at the time I was dating a man who was in California. So to put the two and two together, I ended up going down to California for my master's degree in organizational development and transformation. And I found this school called CIIS, quite well known in kind of holistic psychology circles, California Institute of Integral Studies. And CIIS had a pretty progressive, it's a progressive place to begin with, but it had a very progressive program in organizational development. It was called ODT. So it was OD, Organizational Development and Transformation. So the transformation aspect of it really caught my eye because it had a lot about personal change to it, and change management and psychology. And CIS is also quite spiritual. It has an east-west orientation, very holistic, and that appealed to me as well. So the relationship didn't work out. I got down there, and it was actually quite challenging for the first year with a broken heart, et cetera. But I ended up sticking it out and got my degree in ODT and my two-year program, then another year for a thesis. And while I was completing my second year, I was looking around for internships because we needed to have two of them to complete my program. And you had to, you know, go out and create yours because there wasn't a lot that the school was able to do for you, which was good because it made one be really proactive. So a friend of mine who was in one of my classes at CIS knew that I could doodle, right? And he said, you know, you should really check out this company that does business and change management work, but they do it in this cool visual way, and I think you'd like it, given what he'd seen with my doodles and stuff in class. So Eric's his name, so I followed Eric's advice, and Eric gave me this package one day that had some literature, and the company turned out to be the Grove Consultants, a grove like a grove of trees, the Grove Consultants International. And for those of you who listened to the previous call, the Grove is a very kind of well-known pioneering firm for this niche field, graphic facilitation. So this Eric handed me this package, and I just kind of had this, I remember this visceral reaction to these materials, to their visuals. I think there were some different change maps and vision maps and maybe some material on their workshops and that sort of thing. And I was just like instantly intrigued and, you know, researched it and got down there and I put together a package actually and sent them my resume and was asking for an interview to talk about possibly doing an internship. Well, luck was on my side because one of the managers, or the business manager there, Ed Clausen at the Grove, had spent a lot of time up in Canada, had spent 10 years in Canada. So he was quite intrigued with my resume because it had the Premier's office on it, and he, being an American, he knew what a Premier was and kind of knew the significance of it and at least wanted to bring me in to have a chat with me and maybe reminisce about Canada. So I got my foot in the door for this interview with Ed, and it just so happened my timing was really perfect because this was at the time, this would have been in the late 90s, I guess around 96. Grove was just in the process of productizing their strategic visioning line. And I mentioned that in the other call as well. Strategic visioning is a really great process for doing with groups if they're wanting to do planning and visioning work. And they were just creating a series of, they're called graphic guides. So they're large 4 foot by 8 foot charts that are already pre-drawn and that you take with you under your arm into your meeting and roll them out and you work step by step through them. And as you do that, you get groups to kind of think through their past, present, and future. So very cool materials, and Ed and a woman, Kayla Kirsch, who was kind of the overseer of my project, my job was to help write some of these user manuals for the graphic guides, particularly the cover story visioning process, and also to follow up with other consultants in the field who were beta testing the materials and interview them and find out how it was going and, you know, what they were finding and feed and funnel that information back to the Grove team so that they could refine their materials and, you know, improve them. So that's what my internship project was. Very cool, very good stuff. I was trying like crazy to find work when I was down in the States, and being I'm a Canadian, there was a lot of stipulations on that. So I had to go back home to Canada at the end of my studies, and I needed to complete my thesis project. So I found a group of entrepreneurs back home in Victoria, three entrepreneurs who were buying a restaurant together and, you know, had plans to convert it and change the theme of it, et cetera. So I worked with these three guys for my thesis project, and I did strategic visioning with them. And I did a 3-month project and did all sorts of training and et cetera with them. And, you know, wrote it all up and got it bound into my thesis. And I took another trip down. Actually, I was in my folks' backyard and I was looking at the growth materials just going, this is what I really want to do. I want to work for these people. And I think I had like $500 to my name, a starving student. And so I hopped on a plane, and I had an interview again with Ed, and I wanted to show him my thesis project. And anyway, to make a long story short, I talked him into hiring me. He hired me. He gave me an admin job to start off with, based on what he'd seen, you know, in my thesis project and my enthusiasm, I think, more than anything. And lucky enough, I was able to stay and got employed, and my money lasted me through to my first paycheck. And I spent that first probably 9 months or so to a year just working as an admin person in the Grove as a support for the different consultants and the different facilitators. They would come off. They were flying off and doing work. And I'd help them with their contracting, and I'd help them deal with their different clients. I'd help them manage their reports and packing up materials, whatever it might be. At that particular time, one woman who I was working with and really developed a click and a bond with was Diana Arsenian. And Diana was the Grove's art director and really valued and liked having the admin support. And, you know, we just really developed a mentorship relationship. And she kind of took me under her wing, and I would help her on different charting projects. And I now, in retrospect, I see how much just by being at the Grove I was able to soak up. Even though I wasn't taken off on jobs very often, I did take the Grove training while I was in there. But just being around it through osmosis soaked up a lot, and of course I was, you know, very keen to learn. Well, one day, it was a Friday afternoon, and Diana said, oh, I've got some news for you. So I sit down with her, and she goes, you know that job I have on Monday? And I'm, yes, she's working with Kaiser Permanente, a big healthcare organization. She goes, well, I'm not going to do it. And I'm like, oh? Thinking I have to try to find a replacement for this job for her. She says, no, I talked to the client, and I'm not going to do it, but you are. And I was, oh, my God, I am. What do you mean I am? She goes, you're ready. You can do it. I've talked with the client. Here's how you can set up some different charts to support what you're going to be doing in the meeting. Go for it. So I scrambled that weekend, and I pulled together some templates and some agenda charts and did as much pre-charting as I possibly could, so I at least had some graphics in place that I could just focus on the meeting and just do some graphic recording when I got there. And obviously it must have gone well because I'm still in it 10 years later. And I brought the materials back, and I think Ed's eyes were gleaming when he saw what I did at that meeting. So I had to find a replacement for my admin position, which I did, and then I was off and running to be an internal graphic recorder via the Grove. So I really learned on the job from that point forward. I have great empathy for folks who are going through that first learning phase. I've been there. Just because I worked at the Grove doesn't mean that I had my hand held a whole lot. I was really thrown into the deep end and had to learn how to tread water and swim. And part of my passion in this work is to make that journey a little bit easier for other people and to handhold and to help coach. So I know what that fear is like, to have a blank sheet of paper when you're first learning to graphic record, and how to keep breathing and not panic and seize up, but just how to learn to do this work. And I found in my own situation, and I found with other people, that we are normally one step ahead of the group that we're working with, and they're very appreciative of our work. And we are our own worst enemy or critic about our own work. Other people, you know, tend to critique it less harshly than we do. So I'm guessing that's probably the case for you. If you are a newer person to the field and you're still going through that learning curve, have compassion for yourself and know that people are probably very much appreciating what it is that you're doing. And with practice, with mileage, you will find your style, you will find your feet in this, and, you know, you'll get good at it. It's just a matter of time. So that was certainly my experience. I spent the latter 90s in a whirlwind. There were months there that I wasn't home for maybe 5 days of the whole month. This was the boom for the dot-coms, the boom for technology, and the Grove, and I and my colleagues there were really riding that wave. Traveling all over, working throughout North America and Europe, very fortunate to work with a lot of top companies. I worked with the BBC in London, worked with Lucent and HP and Nortel Networks and Ericsson, just, you know, really incredible companies. And also did a lot of work with architects, American Institute of Architecture, and a lot of their other organizations in the architecture field. Very interesting work. And eventually what ended up happening after about four years with the Grove was I figured out a way, because of the immigration stuff, I basically created my own company. My boyfriend at the time was a lawyer and helped me figure out how to create an LLC. So I created Make Your Mark LLC, and that was in 2001, and I believe it was March or so. And I had really kind of crappy timing in some ways, because 6 months later 9/11 hit. So I had an incredible first 6 months when I went out on my own, and the dot-com bust had hit. So the technology work wasn't there as it once was, but I was, you know, able to go into education work and healthcare and working quite a bit with foundations. And all that was going fine until the morning of 9/11. And I was actually supposed to be in New York for a job, and a colleague of mine did that herself, and she got stuck there for a week. So I was actually feeling very grateful that that particular situation did not work out, and I was in San Francisco when 9/11 happened. And I know some of my Canadian colleagues were, you know, surprised. It was obviously much different in Canada than it was in the States, but it, you know, it was quite a profound experience for me to be there during that time. And the graphic recording, graphic facilitation field, in my opinion, we really took a hit, as did so many other things in the American economy. Obviously, flying was affected, and companies were really holding their breath and just waiting to kind of stabilize and see what the heck was going to happen. And so work really dried up. It stopped almost overnight. And kind of a very scary situation, especially when you're just 6 months and just starting your own business. And kind of squeaked through for about another 6 months or so. And it became apparent my relationships dissolved as well at that time. So I kind of read the signs and read the tea leaves, and it was time for me to return home. My anyway, so I ended up returning to Canada, and this would have been in 2002, and really regrouping after quite a challenging couple of years, and finding myself back home in Canada, different world, different country, very healthy economy, and different perspective, obviously, from the States, and you know, just a distance from the things that were going on with the American War, et cetera. So it was a very surreal experience, kind of shell shock to come from San Francisco back to Victoria, back to Vancouver Island, back to my hometown, which I had been away from for 10 years. So that first year back was particularly the first winter back. Victoria is very rainy. It's like Seattle weather. So I had a very rainy winter and had a lot of time to think. And this is where the graphic coaching work that I now spend the bulk of my time doing really came together. I had been working for years with individuals on the side in addition to my organizational work. But with this kind of a very slow winter, I had time, and the name shifted, shift, like making a shift, S-H-I-F-T. Shift, it kind of came to me as a download one afternoon, and I spent the winter designing the process and designing the templates and really pulling that all together and doing sketches and starting to work with an illustrator to create the templates and was working with, you know, different people who I had met and colleagues were starting to fly in from the States to work with me. I have a very nice character home. I have a studio here in a very cute place, neighborhood in Victoria, British Columbia, just from the kind of famous Inner Harbor, just a short walk away. So it lends itself very well for people to fly in and stay in downtown hotels and have a nice experience and then walk 10 minutes over to my studio where I can work with them and do their individual thinking work. So that's kind of bringing me more up to the present. Since I've been back in Victoria, which has been 4 years now, I mostly have done, there's not a lot of recording work, per se, up in Canada, and I'm a bit reluctant with the immigration issues, et cetera, crossing the border. So my work, either I'm doing graphic facilitation up here in Canada, the odd time I travel, you know, to different places, in the States or in Europe for work, but now people mostly come to me. I've developed quite a large web presence, and I really like to teach and share my skills with people, particularly as I'm moving more into my, have moved more into my coaching business, and people are coming to me to be coached, so I work with them over the phone. I'm wanting to really share the skills that I have in graphic recording and graphic facilitation, and make sure that they have a life beyond me. So I do a lot of teaching and training and mentoring on those base skills. I'm not out traveling as much doing it myself, per se, any longer, because, frankly, I've paid my dues flying around. And to have a life, I've chosen to be more land-based and stay home and have people come to me. But I do trainings. I have a training here called Meeting Graphics 101, which gives you the base underlying skills. I do graphic recording boot camps, kind of two-day boot camps, bringing new folks or intermediary folks of the field together to really hone their skills and do lots of practice and lots of chart drills and all these kinds of fun things. And I also do one-to-one training. So people will come to me and work in my studio for 1 day or 2 days at a time, focus specifically on where they're at and what they next want to develop. And that's very fun and very valuable mentoring work. And then also do ongoing telephone coaching work with people, helping them to develop their practice and helping them contracting and, you know, all that business stuff that goes with the work. So that's my story. That's kind of how I got to where I'm at. And I am very blessed to be, you know, very connected with people in this field. It is a niche field. We are spread out all over the world. And part of what Make Mark is about is providing a central resource because I do know different people in this field. I can get them on the phone, or I can interview them, and I can write articles and really help people understand more about what graphic recording is and graphic facilitation is, and also help newbies, if you'll forgive the term, help newer folks get that confidence, get that skill set, get that chutzpah to start learning these skills and using them and start developing. I'm very into coaching and mentoring. So that's the question, or the answer to the question, how did you get where you are, gives you in a nutshell my story. What I'd like to do now, and we've got about another half hour or so on this call. I'm not sure if I'll take all that time. But what I'd like to do now is bring your attention to that article I'd mentioned previously. So you want to be a graphic recorder. And I'd like to kind of just talk about, if you're new to this field, let me give you my advice about where to start or how to start building, you know, some skills and get going in this field. A lot of people, you know, phone me and ask me, and I've got the article, but, you know, might as well hear me in spoken word kind of tell you my suggestions. So hopefully by now you've got a good sense of what graphic recording and graphic facilitation are. You can go to these telephone calls and listen to them. Go to the site, read the articles, look through the portfolio. Chances are you've probably seen one of my colleagues in action. That might be part of why you're on this site or listening to this call. Listen to the other calls and interviews I'm going to have, because I'm going to have different people who do different aspects of this work, which will help you even understand the field even more. But I'm going to believe that you've got a pretty good understanding of what graphic recording and graphic facilitation are. So next, let's talk about the skills that are needed. And, you know, each person I talk to, you're going to have a different background. You're going to have a different skill set. Some things you're already going to have in spades, and other things you're not, and you're going to need to develop them. So, for example, you might come from an art background. So you might have the art side of this work really, under your arm. You got it down. But you're going to have to develop some understanding about planning or visioning or strategy work or how to organize information. And sometimes the big, huge aspect of this work is people need to learn how to listen. They need to learn how to listen and how to synthesize, and sometimes how to put themselves or their own ego, particularly if they're doing graphic recording, put themselves out of the way and just really channel and be a sieve to what's going on in the room if you're doing that kind of recording. So graphic recording, you need excellent listening and synthesizing skills. You need to be able to quickly understand and follow information, and you might not be familiar with this information. You need to be able to sort through it and determine importance, priority, relevance, etc. And then you're going to need to have some sort of visual graphic art formatting skills to be able to translate that importance and priority into attractive, engaging notes that others can easily comprehend. Also, given the public nature of this work, some of it's done in the studio and it's prepared ahead of time and that sort of thing, but most of it is done live in front of people, real time. So graphic recorders, and I'll talk a bit about graphic facilitators in a second, but graphic recorders, I mean, you need to be calm. You need to be centered, grounded kind of individual. Oftentimes you're in stressful situations or you're around people who are very stressed out because they've got kind of high priority meetings happening. So you have to be okay to deal with that and be a calming kind of influence around people who might be a little ramped up. It also helps that you're an independent kind of person, that you're a self-starter, you can be relied upon, you don't need to be told, you know, step by step what to do, that you can just go into a situation and kind of assess it and then, you know, do your thing. Yes, you have to be able to work interdependently too. So it just, you know, the people who are good in this work are people who are generally organized and reliable kinds of people. And there's also, you know, it's a business. And if you're going to be an independent professional, as opposed to maybe you want to use these skills inside your organization, but if you want to work independently, you know, you also have to be a solo business person. So you have to be able to contract your role and your fee clearly and really, you know, define your scope of work and your responsibilities. And you have to be able to get yourself to meeting sites, so be able to hop on planes and print out directions and use rental cars and all that sort of thing to get yourself on time to the meeting site. And you just have to have general basic business and marketing skills that any self-employed professional needs to have to run a successful and profitable business. Now, the range of this varies, but you do have to have some computer skills. And some photography skills are very helpful as well. You can learn those, just like you can learn the business basics, but just heads up, be prepared. You're going to want to be able to, you know, get and handle a digital camera and be able to process photos and be able to create some basic meeting reports. Some people in this field, their graphical recorders don't handle any of that themselves. There are vendors you can use, but, you know, I really think that it's not too hard. If I can learn it, anybody can learn it, and I can teach you. Others can teach you. But, you know, I think your value add is a lot more when you're able to do these things yourself. And, you know, you can work virtually with other team members, too, to provide documentation services. So that's about some of the skills you're going to need for graphic recording. For graphic facilitation, obviously you need all those graphic recording skills that I've already been talking about. And you also have to have the regular facilitation skills that a typical facilitator does. So to be able to speak and lead and be in front of a group and create and design an agenda with your clients and depending on what kind of facilitation work you're doing, you have to have the skill sets to be able to lead and do planning and visioning forums or whatever it is that you might be doing your facilitation in. I work with a lot of facilitators, kind of straight facilitators, who then want to add in graphics to their toolkit, which is a really nice way to go about it. Or the other way is, if you're already a graphics recorder, because you have been exposed to so many different meetings, if you are want to move into a more verbal role, and a more leadership role, then you would make, like I have in my career, you make that transition from a recorder into being a graphic facilitator. So obviously different ways to become a graphic facilitator. If you don't know what a facilitator is and you don't know what those basic skills are that I'm talking about, a good site to go to is the International Association of Facilitators website. Just look up International Association of Facilitators on the web, IAF, and you'll find it. So what kind of background do you need? I think you've heard me say this in my story a bit. There is no one background that you need to have. Many people enter this field, and they come from many different backgrounds. I know people who have been nurses, who have been city planners, who have been artists, who have been consultants, who have been, social workers. You know, there's the whole range of backgrounds, whether you want to be a graphic facilitator or you want to be a graphic recorder. So, again, you know, whatever you've got, if you're interested in this work, there's probably some way that you can build upon it. You know, to segue into it. So, you know, be pleased with what you've got, and there's a way that you can probably work with it to build on it. What else should I tell you? But I'm just flipping through this article. You can read it. In the article, it talks about what do I most enjoy about the field, what are some of the downsides. You can go to there. I won't go into it now. How do I find work in terms of the marketing aspects? there's a lot that I do to market myself. Obviously, this phone call on my website is just an example. I myself tend to write articles. I have and will be continuing to work with a PR kind of specialist to help get articles in the local newspaper, get on the radio, that sort of thing. Because the visual work is very unique, it's a nice hook for, you know, putting out a press release and maybe getting your local TV station or your local radio or your newspapers kind of interested in what you're doing. They might write a blurb about you. Another thing that I recommend regularly is the International Forum of Visual Practitioners, which is our grassroots kind of association for this field. IFVP.org is the name of the website. Go. There's an annual conference. If you're new to this field, I really recommend you go. You can meet people face-to-face. It's normally a very well-designed process. It's fun. It's quite affordable. They're normally held in the San Francisco Bay Area or around. And you can meet people face-to-face. And a lot of my work comes from referral and relationships. So it's knowing people in the field. What happens a lot is that you get these things, I call them powerhouse days. They're a day when all the clients seem to want you for one day. And there's only one of you, so you can only work with one of them. So you have to refer your work to somebody else, and vice versa. They do the same for you with their powerhouse days. So it's very important to develop these relationships with other people in the field, because then you can refer back and forth to each other. And, you know, of course, you want to know who does what and what their work looks like and who you feel comfortable referring your clients to and vice versa. But it's very important. That's where a lot of my work comes from, is from my relationships with other people in the field. Another way that I find work and I recommend for others is volunteer. It always comes back. Whenever I do something for pro bono or for free, and, you know, I'm careful about what I do, and particularly when I returned to Victoria, I had to start all over again in terms of my network, local network anyway, and people weren't really very familiar with this kind of work. So I would do demos, or I'd go to a local university and they have a business program, and I was invited in to do some talks and some demos there. I worked with, in my family, we're connected in with the Kidney Foundation, so I've done some pro bono work for the Kidney Foundation. And all of this work has always, even though it's free or volunteer work, has always led to more work. I mean, like sevenfold, tenfold. It's amazing how that law of reciprocity really works. So another thing that I do is workshops and work, just getting out there and working. Work begets more work. You do good work, you work in an area that you like, and, you enjoy yourself. And when you do, people pick up on that, and it goes from there. Now, a lot of those things you're not going to be able to do maybe right off the bat when you're first starting off. So what do I suggest for steps if you're a complete beginner? So I have a couple of articles on my site that you can start with. This article, the So You Want to Be a Graphic Recorder, is a good place to start. There's also another one, 22 Tips for Practicing Your Skills. Just begin. Begin. If you've got this, first off, there's different books you can buy. Buy some books. Read up on the field. Study the website. Talk to different people. I've got a lot of stuff on my site for free to support you. Just hone up on it all. Invest in some training. Again, I offer training. Grove offers training. Other colleagues in the field offer training. Go to that International Forum for Visual Practitioners site. There is a directory on there that is a geographical directory, so you can find folks in your area. Leslie Sam and Jew, she talks about this in her phone call, where you can find folks in your local area, and you have to be persistent. You have to have something to offer them, whether it's a fee that you can pay or some volunteer hours, but build up a mentorship relationship with someone who's close to you in your area, or somebody whose style, you know, that you like and appreciate, who may not live right next door to you. There's ways that we can coach over the phone and support you. Another big thing is just start doing the work wherever you're at. If you're in an organization, start finding safe places that you can start practicing. It might be at a regular meeting that happens. It might be if you're a coach, an internal coach or something. Just start putting up some large sheets of paper up on the wall. And one of my, I think somewhere on my site, and the IFVP site certainly has it, about where to get the large paper and where to get some of these materials. And you can buy them from Grove as well. Anyway, just get some of these materials. Get a hold of the large sheets of paper. Put them up on your wall. Get some pens. You can practice. You can put on NPR or put on some spoken word tape and just start practicing your skills, even, you know, just in the safety and privacy of your own home. Then branch out from there. Start working maybe with your friends. Early on when I was experimenting with graphic coaching, I'd get all my friends to sit in the chair and I'd record out their history maps, you know, their life maps. They loved it, and it gave me very good practice. It actually eventually turned into a whole side business for me. So practice, and enlist whoever you can to start working with. You may volunteer if you have a church or a faith group that you belong to. Volunteer. Look at those strategic visioning templates that Grove has. Maybe purchase a couple of those and volunteer to lead your church group through, you know, painting out the history map of the organization, or doing some visioning work about where do we want to go from here. You know, find those safe places that are going to stretch you a little bit, where you start using the graphics. It might push you out of your comfort zone, but that's the only way you grow, is by doing those things. And you'll find out quickly enough, like I said, the group will be very appreciative, and you will find out what you can do. It's the only way you find out is by doing it, and the only way through is through. You have to just start doing the work. So those are things that I suggest to really get yourself going. And what will happen once you start volunteering, and I suggest you volunteer in places that you really do care about and that you have some sort of heart or professional connection with, because people will see you working there, and they will ask you to help, and you will start getting jobs, and you will start getting paid jobs. And so you might as well start making those contacts in the area that you actually care about. So trust me, I've kind of learned this maybe the hard way a little bit, because if you do go into situations that you don't particularly like or enjoy, you know, you're just going to make more contacts there and get more of the same. So you might as well start right from the beginning with a place that you do like, or a topic area, or a group of people that you have some sort of connection and genuine care for. And, you know, you're really off and running when that happens, because you'll continue to make really great contacts. Again, resources. You can look on this, so you want to be a graphic recorder article. I've got, you know, a page and a half of all sorts of resources. Also in the links and resources section of the makemark.com site, there's a whole bunch of resources that you can click through. The Association for Visual Practitioners is there. There's a wonderful blog, Peter Durant in Philadelphia. I believe he's in Philadelphia. Graphicfacilitation.blogs.com. Peter's got this very eclectic, packed blog full of all sorts of graphic-related paraphernalia. It's really quirky and it's fun, and he's got a lot of art stuff in there as well, because he comes from more of an art background as well. But they've got some great recording and graphic facilitation stuff on there. The Grove Consultants is a natural, grove.com, like the Grove of Trees. Check out their products. Order a couple of products. Try the history map. Try cover story visioning with the group. He's also got tons of good facilitation manuals. They're They're good price. You can write them off because they're a business expense. So, you know, fill your boots on stuff like that. There's lots of facilitation methodologies out there that use visuals. Impressive Inquiry is a good one. Global Business Network, GBN.com. GBN's got their series on scenarios. I know they've got, you know, a pretty high-end training that you can take. I'm not sure if you can purchase their scenario products, which are visual templates, directly from them, but it's worth taking a look. I think you probably can. OpenSpace is another technology that uses visuals. OpenSpaceWorld.com. Interaction Associates, again, put facilitation on the map, and I believe they continue to offer facilitation courses. World Cafe, theworldcafe.com. Juanita Brown, David Isaacs, have some really great stuff for collaborative dialogue, and you will often see graphic recorders brought in to record World Cafes. So really, really nice stuff. Again, all those links are on my links and resources page at www.makemark.com or in this article that I'm working off of right now. So you want to be a graphic recorder. So what's my parting advice? My parting advice is go for it. You know, where there's a will, there's a way. If you, you know, I talk with people, they email me, and, you know, you have to have a passion for this work because it is going to take some work at the beginning to get connected and to develop your skills and to make that leap. Particularly, you're wanting to make the leap into full-time or part-time self-employment with this work. You know, it can be done, and it requires a lot of personal visioning, a lot of faith in yourself, a lot of chutzpah, risk-taking. I talked about leaving my home with $500 and going down to San Francisco. I mean, that's just one of a couple of risks that I've had to take in my life and continue to have to take to, you know, do work that I love. And I have to continually work through my mindsets and my beliefs about what is possible and possible for me. So I really invite you to, if you have a passion for this work, you can do it. And you can figure out a way to do it your way with who you are, the skills that you have right now, and, you know, the things that you think you want to be doing and how you want to be doing them. You can figure out a way. I'm kind of living proof of it. You know, who would have thought one can make their you know, a good full-time living, you know, doodling at the wall, so to speak. And I'm here to tell you that you can do it. It can be done. And there are resources to support you in doing that. So I'm happy to coach and mentor. You can go to the site, makemarkershiftitcoach.com. I have different programs that are very affordable, group settings, or there's ways that you can do it if you, you know, can afford it and have the budget to work one-to-one. And there are certainly, I'm not alone, there are other people in this field who, you know, can do the same. And Leslie Samanju in her interview, this really talks, and I think it's true, that people in this field are kind of a rare breed. They're very nice, creative, kind people. Hard workers, too, and very smart, savvy people. But it's a small field. It's growing, definitely, but it's still a nice small niche to it. And, you know, it is possible to make connections with people and to get the kind of support you need to move forward with your skill development. So I think I'll end there. It gives you a lot. Thank you if you've listened all the way through. I hope this has been helpful. You've got in an overview of what my, you know, weird and wonderful route has been in this work. And I've also done my best to set you up with, you know, recommendations of how to develop yourself, what next steps to take. So just trust your instincts. You will know what your next step is, whether you need to get some training or, you know, you just need to go get some products or you just need to go do it. just start doing it. So all the best to you. Let me know if I can help in any way. And get out there and use those markers. So take good care. Bye for now.